It is Valentine's week, and we started last week talking about love and relationships, and we started talking about the greatest love song of all, Solomon's Song of Songs in your Bible. So this morning, you can take your phone out and go to our app if you have our app on your phone. It's easy to get. If you don't, just look for freedomhill.church or Freedom Hill Community Church and find our app there, and you can follow along there, or you can follow along with your bulletin, and on the screen, we'll have it as well. But last week, we talked about four attractive qualities, four faithful attractive qualities. We don't want fatal attraction, right? We want faithful attraction. So things to look for. And we said godly character. We said openness. We said setting high standards, right? And we said be the person you're looking for is looking for, right? Let your mind wrap around that for a moment. Be the person you're looking for is looking for. And then we talked the last faithful attraction thing, quality, we said, was consistent encouragement. An encourager is not someone who pretends you have no faults. It's someone who refuses to pretend that you are your faults, that your faults define you, and so they keep encouraging you. So last week was all about having those faithful qualities in ourselves so that we are attractive in faithful ways, but also that shows us what to look for when we're looking for attraction, or if you're already married, what to try and build into your marriage relationship so that you continually are attracted to each other and don't repulse each other. Today we're going to talk about hot pursuit, how to pursue love. And I want to show you something, but first, I need your promise that you will not laugh. All right, yeah. Seriously, I showed this to the youth on Friday night. I was doing the talk for them, and they laughed. So you're promising me now. I heard a no. All right, so the year was 1989, and Acid Wash was in. And so this is right around when college, all right, go away from that now. So this is right around when college had ended, or college had started for me. I finished high school, and that year from high school ending to around when that picture was taken was not a great time in my life spiritually. I started to really question, what do I really want in life? I started to wander away from God a bit, wander away even from the church a little bit, and things just weren't going so well. But as I came, actually, my first year of college, I ended up on academic probation. And I'm not a stupid person, but I do stupid things. And so I was on academic probation. I was not doing well. But at the end of 1989, as I was starting my second year of college, God started to get a grip in my life again, reminding me of things he had done in my life in the past, of times he had spoken to me, and what he had said, and what he wanted for my life. And so I began to pray, and then this weird thing was happening through that, you know, that end of 1989 semester of school. I was praying, I was reading the Bible, I was really seeking God, I wanted to know him. And every time I would get down to pray, this girl would come to my mind. This one particular girl named Christina. And I'd be like, no, I'm trying to pray, I rebuke that thought. I don't want to think about her, I'm trying to pray, God. But like consistently over and over again, I'd be praying and I would begin to think about her. And then I began to wonder, okay, is this God maybe saying something to me? And then the calendar switched, then we got to 1990, and our church started the year with their week of prayer, the way we do still today. And so I began going to those prayer meetings each night. And the second or third night, Christina was there each of the nights too. And finally I said, you know what, I've got to talk to her. So I went up to her at the end of the prayer meeting, and I said, hey, can we go get something to eat? I want to talk to you. And she said, oh, okay. And she went over and got her jacket, and my heart was like, all right, this is going to be it. You know. But then my heart dropped as I heard her say to this old woman, like 40-something year old woman, hey, we're going out to eat. You want to come? And now if you ask Christina, because I know a lot of you after service, you run over and you talk to her because she's over at Leading Kids Church. I know you'll run over and you'll say, he said that you did this. And she'll tell you, I didn't ask her. I just mentioned that we were going out to eat. But if you knew this woman, you would know that just mentioning we're going out to eat was inviting her. She was going to come. So we get to the place. We get to the diner because in New York, it's all diners. And we sit down and we order our food. And this old lady stumbles her way to the bathroom. And I said to Christina, you know, I really wanted to talk to you. At which point she felt, oh, no, I'm so sorry. She felt bad. And she still wasn't getting it. she thought I wanted to talk to her because I was going through some kind of problem and I needed some guidance or someone to help me. And so I was getting her pity now. So we ate our pizza burgers and we left. And that was that. But God kept putting her in my heart. And so I was learning to play guitar, and I borrowed a couple music books from her because she played guitar, and I started to play to help lead in our church with her. Anything I could do to kind of be around her, I was doing those things, and I borrowed these two books. And then one day in the middle of January, freezing cold, I went back to her house to give her the books back, not because I was done with them, but because I wanted to have an excuse to go by her house. So I ring the bell, she comes to the door, we're standing there, I give her the books, and like I'm kind of like making small talk, and she's making small talk with the door wide open. Her mom comes out to find out, why is the door open? It's freezing. And she sees me there. Now you need to know, Christina's mom and grandmother, they loved me way before Christina did. So her mom said, well, Anders, come in. And she walked us into the living room and sat us down, and then she took off. She left. She left us there. And I proceeded to just spill my heart to Christina. Here's what's been happening in my life, and here's what's going on. And telling her, every time I pray and I'm trying to see God, you keep coming to mind, and I don't know why, but I feel like God is leading me to you. What do you think? So I said, okay, well, think and pray about this. And we made another arrangement to get together and eat at the diner without that old lady. And yada, 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 here we are today. I know, I've yada, yada, yada'd over the best part, because from that diner date on, we began to build a relationship where we went through all these seasons together. Some of you have gone through many, many seasons. Christina and I have been through a few, married 23 years now. But right away, that initial season of infatuation, some might say she's still there. Then we went through the season of engagement, preparing to be married. Then we went through season of honeymoon and then graduate school together. And then we've gone through seasons of trials and troubles and sorrows and failures and successes and joys. We've gone through many different seasons. And what we've learned is throughout all the seasons of relationship, there's some things that need to be there all the time. There's one thread that has to be there all the time, and that thread is pursuit. You've got to keep pursuing. There are all kinds of obstacles that are going to get in the way of pursuit, of pursuing a godly relationship, a relationship that's really going to honor God and experience what God has for a husband and a wife. There are all kinds of things. There's jealousy, there's stupidity, there's trouble. We've experienced people trying to meddle, people trying to come between us and get in our relationship. Failures, and again, like I said, I'm not a stupid person, but I do stupid things. About 2 weeks into dating, I came to church, and she was there, but she didn't save a seat for me. And I was ticked off. I'm like, what are you doing? Do you not like me anymore? What's going on? I was maybe insecure. And so that we had this long talk about, okay, how serious are we? Do we, you know, what do we think? Are we getting too serious too fast? And in that conversation, I might have called her a witch. I didn't say, you're a witch. I said, for all I know, you could be a witch. Which, listen, it's funny if you know Christina, because there's no way she could be a witch. It was irony, but you know what? Don't do that. That's bad. It's wrong. It doesn't lighten the mood. The stupid things we do, but you learn there are things that are going to be obstacles. Some of the things are things you do. Some of the things are things that other people do. Some of it's just life. You've got to keep pursuing. The point is, there are obstacles when you're trying to pursue a relationship that honors God, and you've got to keep pursuing. And today I want to talk about pursuing love and pursuing relationships in a way that honors God. Whether you're single and hoping to be married, or maybe you're dating, or maybe you've been married for a while, you need to know how to pursue a God-honoring love relationship. So we're going to talk about two of the many seasons of love, two seasons, and we're going to talk about two things to pursue no matter what season of relationship you're in. So the first season is this. It's the season of preparation, the season of preparation. It's the winter time right now, right? Thank God it's raining today and not snowing. But if you look out when you leave today, it looks like everything's dead, right? It looks like nothing's alive. It's all kind of fallen. The leaves are gone. But it's not all dead. winter's not a time of death. What's actually happening in those trees and in those plants and everything is they're breaking down proteins, and they're reorganizing their cell membranes, and they're preparing for the spring. In fact, there are some trees, some buds that won't open and fruit until they've gone through a winter. The cherry blossom is that way. It has to go through a winter season before it'll actually open its blossoms and bud. Winter is a time of preparation. It's a season of preparation. So turn to our song, the Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 11 and 12, and listen to what, remember, it's a poem, it's a song, it's the interplay between a man and a woman who are working their way and who are married, and here's what they write, here's what he says. See, the winter is past, the rains are over and gone, flowers appear on the earth, the season of singing has come, the cooing of doves is heard in our land. So he's not just talking about weather, he's making an observation that becomes a metaphor for relationship. Winter is necessary. For them, the winter brought all these rains that helped things to prepare, to grow again, and to bear fruit again. And as the plants emerged in the springtime and began to flower, everything begins to look like it's coming alive. The animals all start moving more again, and it seems like it's all coming back to life. But the truth is, it wasn't really dead. It was just preparing. Bears go into hibernation. They look dead, but they're not. They're just preparing to come back out and come to life again, strength again. But they're not dead. They are preparing. And without relational winters, we aren't prepared for the relational springs. Some of you are just dying for a relational springtime where this bird starts singing and chirping and you're just enjoying the warmth of love and all that stuff. And you're resenting the relational winter you might be in. But listen, the beginning of love is not the springtime when everything blossoms and the birds start singing. The beginning of love takes place in the seasons of preparation, where your heart is prepared to love and to care for someone else. Love starts in the winter. So if you're married, listen, maybe you've had a rough go of it lately. Maybe it doesn't feel like you're tiptoeing through the tulips. Maybe everything feels icy. And maybe you're tempted to think that marriage is only gets four cycles, right? We dated and got engaged. That was our springtime. We got married and began to build a family. That was our summer. We matured in our relationship. That was our fall. And then you hit winter and you just hang out together until you die. That's not the right picture of marriage, right? Because that's not what we experience. That happens. And then what happens after winter? Spring comes again, right? And that's what marriage is going to be like. There are going to be winters, and there are going to be cycles where you have winters, and those winters are not dead times, even though they may feel like dead times. And maybe those of you who are married here, some of you may feel like you are in a relational winter. Don't despise this time. Use this time to grow, to reorder, to work on the things you need to work on in order to be able to bloom again. Listen, there are times when Christina and I, we have felt icy toward each other. And what I found is when we work through those times, when we talk through those times, and we get together and we don't let it drive us away, we keep pursuing love, and we work through it, what it does is it begins to increase our capacity to love when we reach the springtime. Because we've worked through the issues, we've talked through them, we've fought through them. And then when we come out and get into that place where we're able to cruise again, we're actually more able to be more productive and more loving because of the winter seasons of our marriage. Listen, if you're single, singleness is a time, it's a season of preparation. Maybe you're here single and you need your spiritual roots to grow deeper because the worst thing for you right now might be to get into a relationship because your spiritual roots couldn't handle it. You're not connected to God enough to have the life that He wants for you. And so if you were to go get into a relationship, what would happen is that person would replace Jesus in your life. All your affection for Jesus, you'd forget, and you'd put it all into that person. So maybe instead of chasing so hot after the springtime, accept the wintertime, accept it's a season of preparation, and begin to develop that relationship. Look, my first year of college, I was tempted to date a few girls. But I was also in a really bad spiritual place, and I kind of knew that. And I thank God He preserved me through that time, because I knew I was in a fragile place, and if I had started to date other girls, that might have been the end of me. I might have walked away, and I might have lost out on everything God has for me. because my roots weren't dug deep. So I needed to stay in that winter and prepare and get ready so that I'd be able to have a good, healthy relationship where I truly loved Christina. I needed to love her even before it was time to love her, even before we were dating, even before we were married. So I waited. I didn't date. I stayed away, thank God, because he led me to Christina, and who has always been, from day one, for me, a spiritual rock, someone I could lean on. And I remember thinking, from day one, this woman is going to help me stay close to God and love God. She's never going to come between me and God. If she feels like I'm drifting away from God, she's going to kick my butt back to God and tell me, don't come talk to me until you've talked to God. If I had rushed through that winter time just because I was so eager for the spring and love, I would have missed out on her and the gift she is from God. Don't rush through the time of preparation. Find that person who also is preparing, and when they're ready, when you do that, when love is ready to bloom, you'll be amazed at how it blooms and what happens. So don't rush through the preparation. Draw close to God through that season of preparation, and then that'll lead you to that next season when you begin to find that person, and you're going to hit that next season is the season of infatuation. Look, listen to what she says about her beloved in chapter 2, verse 8 and 10. She's through 10. Listen, my beloved, look, here he comes, leaping across the mountains, bounding over the hills. My beloved, he's like a gazelle or a young stag. Look how he stands there behind our wall, gazing through the windows, peering through the lattice. My beloved spoke, and he said to me, arise, my darling, my beautiful one, come with me. When you first get into a relationship, those feelings are so powerful. There is nothing that can stop you. You're going to pursue that relationship no matter what anybody says or does. You'll do anything for that person. Christina and I, we had started dating in January. The summer of that year, she had an internship for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship up in Buffalo, New York, which is about 9 hours from New York City, where we live. And that was agony. That was torture. Like, how are we going to survive this? Because our infatuation was what we were living off of at that time. And infatuation, we got to be together. We got to be next to each other. We have to see each other. We have to be holding hands. So I jumped in my car and I drove that 9 hours. I kind of made it in 6 hours. I drove to that place where she was, and I spent a night sleeping in this house on a floor with a bunch of people I didn't even know, a bunch of guys where the guys were all sleeping, and just because I wanted to be able to be near her. And I didn't really get any alone time with her. I just got to be near her with these 40 other people who were there because that's what I wanted. And then I got home, and I would make her a mixtape. It wasn't really a mixtape. It was me sitting there and just talking into the tape, telling her all the things I loved about her, telling her just what was going on. And then I finished it with the song a lot of you who are older will remember, I Will Be Here by Stephen Curtis Chapman. Tomorrow morning if you wake up and the sun does not appear, I will be here. And so that song plays, and it finishes. And as I know, I'm a romantic guy, right? I got to get points for that. She'll listen to this tomorrow as she's walking the dog, and she'll be like, oh, I love him. So, like, it finishes, I will be here. And then I just said, I love you, Christina. And then, boom, the tape goes out, and I sent that to her. It's like, because that's infatuation. Infatuation is so pure and so raw, but it's all emotion. Listen to the Song of Songs. This guy comes bounding over the hills, bounding over the mountains. Nothing is going to stop him from getting to her. He's peeking through the windows. He's not a pervert. He's not a peeping Tom. It's that he's just eager to see her, so he's out around her house like, come on, come out to me, like a wild animal, like, come on, let's go run in the fields. It's this all the pounding energy of infatuation. And that's what infatuation is. It is just, we want to be with each other no matter what. When Christina and I were in college, we were at a commuter school in New York City. And so, like, on our breaks, we'd go and just hang out in one of our cars, which everyone got a spot closer because usually you had to park a mile away. And we would just, you know, hang out in the car, and she would try to make out with me because we just wanted to spend time. And I would say, listen, we got guardrails, babe, guardrails. But we just, every moment we could, we wanted to be together. The season of infatuation is raw, pure emotion. And that makes it overwhelmingly powerful and even addictive. Some of you, maybe you've bounced from relationship to relationship and you don't know why. It's because you're addicted to infatuation. It's pure emotion, and that doesn't make it less real. That doesn't make it less good. It doesn't make it bad or wrong. Just recognize that it has a place and that it doesn't really have that much substance. It's like lighting a match. You light that match and it flares and it's bright and it's brilliant and it's kind of fun, you know, and you see that thing flare up. But love needs something more than a little matchstick if it's going to burn and become a real bonfire, right? You got to feed it something more. And that's why infatuation typically lasts anywhere. Some studies will say it lasts a day, but it can last usually just a few months, up to maybe 24, 36 months at best, because it's meant to be temporary. It's not meant to last forever. It's meant to ignite and then give way to something stronger, something better, something more lasting. Infatuation is a great fire starter, but you can't live on it. That's why the season of infatuation is not a season to just run away with that person. It's a time to lean on your friends and your family, people who are close to you, so that they can help you see, because you're going to be blinded. For those of you who are single and or dating or looking to date, looking to get married, if you're in that season of infatuation, just recognize your brain's not working right now. It's just not. And it's not bad. It's good. But you're in the fire starter place. You need other people around you. Look, Christina knew I was the one because her mother and grandmother approved me. Right? Seriously. I'm not kidding. That helped her know. And then my first time I went over her family's house, her grandfather just sat there. Salvatore Guzzo was his name. And he just stared at me the whole night and watched me to make sure. And then he embraced me. And she knew, right? She had that, so she knew. But we've watched other people who get into that season of infatuation. They disregard their family. They disregard their friends. They just, no, there's nothing like this. There's nothing will ever be like this. I love them. And they take off and they ignore everyone. And then when that infatuation burns out, they burn out. They crash. The relationship crashes and they're devastated, because sometimes they've already gotten married. Sometimes they've already had kids. And when that match of infatuation burns out, they sit there trying to strike it again and again and again to reignite it, but you can't reignite it. What you need to do is let it give way to a real love that's now burning on better fuel than just the fuel of infatuation. That's what we gotta learn. Those of you who married for a while, listen, don't try and rekindle infatuation. Aim for the slower burning fuels like trust and faithfulness and encouragement, support, listening to each other, striving to understand each other. Those are the fuel that are going to build a real fire here. And those of you who are in that season, you're dating and that other person's the most wonderful person, so blah, 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 all that stuff. Let me just give you three things that'll help you from burning out and just being stuck there with nothing after the infatuation runs out. Three things during this time of infatuation, if that's where you are, three things to limit. Limit your time, first of all. You're going to want to abandon everyone else on the planet. Don't do it. Incorporate yourselves into each other's world. You learn the most about a person by observing them interact with other people you know, right? Watch and see. Don't just keep running off alone. Be around other people. Limit your time together alone. Limit your talk is the next thing. If you're on date three and that guy's like, "You're the one for me. I just know it. You're the only woman in the world. I must have you. I must marry you." Listen, throw a bucket of water on that dude. If she starts after two dates introducing you to all of her cats by name, run. There's a lot of stuff wrong with that. Just run. Listen, you're gonna be feeling all these powerful feelings, right? You don't have to verbalize all of them. Wait until your mind settles down and is truly functioning properly. And then you can begin to verbalize those feelings. Build your relationship on a spiritual and godly friendship, and then it will be able to stand. You start throwing big, giant words and proclamations of love on that thing with your words. You're not careful with your words. Well, now you've just made all this weight that it wasn't ready to bear, right? And now your relationship has become about words. Before you say it, start living it. Start living it. You really feel like you love them more than anyone in the world? Start showing that by the way you behave toward them and act toward them. Let your words follow. So limit your time, limit your talk, and finally limit your touch. Look, I know we wrestle with touch today, and sometimes in the church I feel like we've gotten, sometimes we're too quiet about it, and we don't say anything, and sometimes we're saying the wrong thing. We'll get there in a second. But listen, I know some people think, but if we don't have sex, how are we going to know if we're sexually compatible? Right? Listen, trust me. If you have a strong foundation of friendship and of respect and of listening to each other and of striving to understand each other and building all those pieces into your marriage, the sexual side will flow naturally out of that and powerfully out of that. I'm not saying you'll never have issues or never have difficulties, but if the other pieces of your relationship are in place, you have the tools you need to work through that. Because I don't care who you are, you're going to have issues physically together at times. What you need is all these other tools that'll help you work through that. Sex flows easily and beautifully out of a relationship built on trust and affirmation and encouragement, loyalty, godly character, openness, partnership, where you've said, I am committing my life to you before God. And then you build that relationship and sex becomes this gift from God to cement that marriage together. It flows beautifully there. But godly character and trust and encouragement, all that other stuff, that doesn't flow out of sex. You got to get the relationship part first. Let God build this spiritual relationship in you first. Make that covenant and that commitment to each other first. So there's no doubt that this is based on a lifelong commitment, not a passing infatuation where you're just using each other for pleasure, right? At certain points in your life, sexual attraction and interactions, they're not going to be hot and heavy sometimes. And if your relationship is only built on that, then it's going to crumble. You won't have any way to rebuild. What I'm saying is, listen, sexual attraction is wonderful. And it's great for decorating your relationship house. Right? You've got a relationship house. Sexual attraction, sex is great for decorating that house, but it's a horrible foundation for that house. The foundation needs to be this spiritual friendship, this partnership, this covenant with God together. So those are the two seasons that we're just going to touch on today. There's many more, but preparation and infatuation. But regardless of what season you're in, I want to give you two things to pursue, to hotly pursue, pursue with all your heart. So here we go. The first thing to pursue is pursue intimacy. Song of Songs again, verse 14 in chapter 2. My dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the hiding places on the mountainside, show me your face. Let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely. What is he pursuing? Her face. He wants to see her, her character. Let me see your face. And then he's pursuing what? Her voice. He wants intimacy. And whatever season you're in, pursue intimacy. Intimacy is not the same as sex. Intimacy is not the same as romance. Intimacy is not the same as proximity, right? Or familiarity. We make those mistakes all the time. We think that proximity and familiarity or sexual attraction are intimacy. They're not. Listen, married people assume that they have intimacy just because they're living in the same place and they can smell each other's breath. That's not intimacy. It's not. You have proximity, not intimacy. You think just because you've somehow convinced maybe some of you who are dating and it's all physical for you, you think because you've convinced this girl to kiss your ugly face that you have intimacy. You don't necessarily. Or you think, oh, because he wants to have sex with you and because he's physically attracted to you, you have intimacy. No, you don't. You have lust, but you don't have intimacy, right? Intimacy is transparency. Intimacy is allowing yourself to be seen and seeing. Show me your face. Let me see you. Christina and I, when we were dating, used to do this thing sometimes. We would just be sitting, eating at a table somewhere. And I would usually start it. I would just start to like stare into her eyes. And she'd be talking and not realize. And then she'd realize I'm staring into her eyes. And then after a minute, she would just stop talking. And then we'd just be staring into each other's eyes. Do that for 10, 15, 20 seconds. A minute. See if you don't start to cry a little bit. See what she'd start to tear up. There's something so deeply intimate and personal about actually looking in and seeing. And it's not just a game at that point. It's I want to see you. And it's I do see you. I see you and I love you. I see you, in her part, it's I see you and I still love you, even though I see you. I see you. I want to hear your voice. I just want to hear you speak to me. I want to hear what you have to say. I want to know you. That's the problem sometimes. We get married, and it's like you go from this time you're seeing and you're listening to each other, and all of a sudden now it's like, hey, wake up and turn over. Stop breathing in my face. It's like we just, you know, we lose some of that stuff, and we don't talk to each other anymore. We need this intimacy. Listen, let me hear your voice. Let me hear your voice. Most couples, this happens, right? You date, and you end up on the phone all the time. And then I know Christina and I, and some of you probably have done this too. It's like, well, no, you hang up. So we start to count to seven. Seven became our number. It's like, okay, it's seven. We'll hang up. And that's silly, and it's stupid, right? But what that was that was us in our relationship infancy pursuing intimacy. We didn't want there to be an end to the talking, to the opening up, to the sharing. We wanted that intimacy. And you pursue it, and it may look silly in those first years, but don't stop pursuing it. Pursue intimacy and let it grow. And that means sharing your hopes and your dreams. And it means, guys, it means sharing your weaknesses. It means sharing your fears. Opening up about it. Don't sit there thinking, oh, no, I don't want to burden her. Stop it with that nonsense. You're there to be each other's partner. Open up and be intimate. Let each other know what's happening inside of you. And that doesn't happen sitting side by side watching a screen. It just doesn't. It happens face to face over a table or holding hands together, looking into each other's eyes. Listen, married people, I'm going to make you squirm a little bit. You will never have the level of intimacy that God wants for you while you are keeping secrets from your spouse. You will never have this level of intimacy that God has for you that will just explode your relationship forward and upward and grow a deep love if you're keeping secrets from your spouse. Why are we connecting? Where's the flame? You don't have flame because you don't have intimacy, and you don't have intimacy because you're keeping secrets. Every secret is like a brick in a wall. Pretty soon, you've got a pretty good wall going. Pretty soon, China's coming over asking you for a recipe because they want to improve their wall because you've put so many bricks up in your wall, and you wonder, why? Well, it's because you started holding things back about how you feel and what you like. Some of you just don't want to cause trouble, so you never say what you like. And then what happens is you begin building up resentment. And you don't even recognize it. But it's there, and it's growing. And then why are you getting snippy? Why are you getting angry? It's because you've allowed resentment to build because you didn't share what you were feeling and thinking. Because you didn't want to cause trouble. Guess what you did? You caused trouble anyway. But now that trouble is bigger. But the awesome thing about God is he can help tear that all down and rebuild it in a moment's notice in a marriage. That's the great news about our God. Whatever you've been pursuing, you turn around and pursue intimacy, God will give you what you need to get there to build your relationship on intimacy. Listen, if you're single or you're dating, that season of infatuation, that gets really blurry, and so it's hard to see well. So take time to really look into each other's faces. Take time to really listen to each other and see. To rub your eyes from all the dreamy sand of infatuation and see each other, listen to each other. And if you're dating someone who refuses to open up about their hopes and dreams and fears and their struggles, that's a warning sign. That's a warning sign. You've got to work on that. You've got to come to that place where you do. You open up and you listen. Some of you maybe need to help build trust with the person you're dating or the person you're married to. Maybe you haven't been trustworthy because of the way you've treated some of their information, right? Create an atmosphere of trust by pursuing intimacy. Pursue intimacy, whatever season you're in. The second one, pursue purity. Verse 15, pursue purity. Catch for us the foxes, those little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom. Remember what I said last week about vineyards in this song, in this poem? Whenever they say vineyards, they're talking about their relationship or their bodies. And so what they're talking about is these foxes, these things that want to come in to the vineyard and start eating the fruit before it's time to pick the fruit and start pulling it off the trees. And they're whatever, anything that comes in and starts to endanger that relationship so that the fruit doesn't come all the way ripe so that you don't get to pick it and turn it into the wine that it's supposed to be that will create this beautiful love between you, right? This is the imagery of the vineyard. Little foxes want to come in and eat that fruit early. and take it early. And what does he tell you to do? Chase them down. He doesn't say go build a bunch of walls and fences. He says chase them down, catch them, so that those little suckers don't ruin this relationship we're building. And they may be things from outside, but more often than not, they're things inside of us. But listen, purity is not something you protect merely. Purity is something you pursue. You don't protect purity by wearing turtlenecks or chastity belts. Wrap a guy up in a straitjacket, you still can't control his mind. Dress all the women in the world in potato sacks, guys are still going to run wild with their imaginations, right? You don't guard purity merely. You have to pursue purity. Purity is something you pursue. So listen, if you're not married, stop thinking about merely protecting your purity. And purity is what? Purity is not asexual. Purity is not, you know, oh no, being prudish. Purity is, I want to love with a love that is so powerful and there is nothing adulterating it. It's, I want it to be like pure. And that, so there's nothing getting in that corrupts it or makes it a little weak because I've let something else crawl in there. I want my love to be 100 proof love. Nothing getting in the way. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about power here when we talk about purity. I want power love, pure love. So stop thinking about that as something to protect only. Think of it as something to pursue. And that's going to mean running around and weeding some stuff out of your life. Maybe there's stuff you got to chase down and some habits you got to cut out and say, you know what? Pornography is not helping me to love. And if anything, it gets in the way. It gets in the way. So pull it out. Catch that fox. Break its neck and get rid of it. Don't do that to real foxes. That's not nice. But get drastic with anything that's getting in the way of your ability to love purely in a way that God loves, all right? Chase it down. If there's relationships and friendships and they're trying to pull you in different directions and it's like, no, it's okay, it's okay. And you're like, no, that's getting in the way of me being able to purely love. And that can happen in so many ways. Whether it's they want to get involved physically with you and just mess around, or maybe they just like, every time you're around them, you're gossiping and tearing people apart. And it's just, yeah, all the time. Guess what? That is going to ruin your ability to love. Maybe they're just complaining all the time. Guess what? That will ruin your ability to love. So you got to look at all your relationships and say, are these things, what's happening around me? What are the things in my vineyard? Go chase them down and ask God, please help me to get this thing out of my life. Listen, it's hard, I know, to do that. Maybe there's a friendship you've got to cut off. Maybe there's someone who you're involved with and they keep pursuing you. And like, come on, let's just have sex. What's the big deal? And you're like, well, no, I want to pursue this the way kind of God gave it to us, that this comes as a thing that seals together a covenant that's forever. Like, that's I want that for sex. I don't just want it to be a fun thing to do. And they're like, well, come on. And they're not chasing it the same way. What I'm telling you is you got to find a way to either stop that, and they agree to stop that, or cut off that relationship. And you may sit here and you may say, well, that's so hard to do. That's just not realistic. You know what's much harder? 3 years from now, 4 years from now, you and I are sitting in my office and we're talking about how your life's a shambles because you didn't take this difficult step now. And so you ended up in a place where your relationship is a mess because you didn't take the time to make it a godly relationship where you pursued love and pursue purity together. That's hard. Let me tell you, that's much, much, I've sat with people through it, much, much harder. Much, much harder. Pursue purity. Pursue purity. Listen, if you want what God has for you, a passionate marriage that will stand the test of time, you got to pursue purity in all your relationships. If you want what everyone else has, if you want what everyone else in the world has, just keep doing what everyone else is doing. You'll get it. But don't be shocked when you burn out. Listen, the church, we've gotten it wrong so many times the way we talk about this. We preach about protecting purity. Don't have sex till you're married. Don't go to movies like this. Keep 4 feet on the floor, 6-inch rule, all those stuff. And they're good guardrails, right? Those are all, none of them are bad things. They're guardrails. But what we need to teach is pursue purity. Don't just, oh no, the world's out to get me with bad things. No, go chase. Go chase stuff down and get rid of it. Pursue purity. Listen, if the foxes eat the fruit early, right? you start engaging in sex and engaging in relationship stuff and going too far too fast without that commitment before God, and you're not pursuing purity, then what happens? They eat all the grapes early. And then it comes time to harvest, and what do you have? Stems. Guess what you can't make now? You can't make the juice. You can't make the wine. And now you miss out on what the whole point was of having a vineyard. It was at the end you can harvest and have this wonderful vintage, right, of drink. And now you don't have that because you went and ate all the fruit early. That's the image they're giving us here. That's the image God's word is giving us here. He has something wonderful for us. And if we just, I want to eat it all now, and don't pursue purity, we miss out on this. We miss out on this beautiful relationship joined together between a man and a woman who have loved each other in a pure way, following God's way, because they pursued purity together. And there's nothing worth losing that for. There's nothing worth losing that for. Pursue purity. And if you're married, listen, how many of you know that just because you're married doesn't make you pure? Right? You don't all of a sudden become sexually pure just because you're married. Right? You still have to pursue purity in your marriage. You have to pursue maintaining motivations toward your partner that are pure, selfless, loving, supportive, encouraging. If you pursue purity, though, if you hotly pursue purity together, I guarantee you, you'll experience a relationship that is more deeply satisfying than anything you've ever known before. Pursue purity in your marriage relationship. Maybe there are foxes creeping around your home, and you need to go chase those things down. You're creeping around the vineyard of your marriage. Maybe it's a little friendship you've developed with someone, but it's, you know, it ain't right. Don't go kill that person. Cut off the relationship, though. Kill the relationship. If it's getting in the way, if it's messing with the vineyard of your marriage, do not play with it. Cut it off. Chase that thing down and get rid of it. Pursue purity by doing that, right? If there's habits you have that are getting in the way of your love for your spouse, chase those things down. Talk about them with each other. Say, I need help to do this, all right? We all need help. Is there anyone here who doesn't need help with controlling their passions and desires and wants and sin? Right, okay, good. My hand's down too. So, what do? Let's be honest. Let's be open. Let's say, here's where I struggle. And now you can together pursue purity with one another. Get rid of those habits. Get rid of those things. Pursue intimacy and pursue purity. Worship team, would you just come back up? Listen, guys, the awesome thing about our God, the awesome thing about God and how he reveals himself through his word is that wherever you are, whatever season you're in, whatever you maybe have been pursuing in your life, whatever you were pursuing when you walked in here today, you can ask him right now to forgive you, to change your life, to transform you, and to make you a new person. And he will do that. He will do that in you today. He'll give you a new relationship. He'll begin to build a new relationship in your marriage today. Wherever you've been, whatever you've been pursuing, whatever has been going on in your life, whether you're single or whether you're in that place, the season of infatuation, whether you're married and everything's great or married and it's a winter time, wherever you are, God will take you and help you keep going that next level, that next place forward in him. He'll help you pursue intimacy and find it, pursue purity and find it. You know what? Maybe some of you, you've got intimacy issues. Because something happened to you, something was done to you that hurt you and harmed you. God can heal that. Please hear me, God can heal that. God, this morning, can heal that and set you free so that you can love. It starts by learning to love him, really. Recognizing that he loves you more than anyone has ever loved you. How he's poured his life out for you. How he died on the cross for you because he loves you. Recognizing that. And then you begin to pursue that loving relationship with him. Because that's what God longs to experience with us. He wants to experience this relationship he created us for. And he wants us to be free to truly love and not be held down by our sin and all these wrong desires. So this morning we're just going to sing this song, Lord, I Give You My Heart. And as we do, I just make it your prayer. Let's stand together. Lord, first and foremost, I want to love you. Teach me to love like I teach me.